Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
And I'm Dr. Tim Pinot.
And we are very excited to be back here to be talking about mental training and mindfulness and peak performance and optimal experience in sport and in other realms of performance. And today we are very excited to have a special guest, our first guest of the podcast, Marymount women's lacrosse coach, Kate Athing.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Kate has been coaching with Marymount for almost 10 years now. This is her sixth season as their head coach. And for the last 4 years, she has taken her team to the ECAC championships.
So congrats on all your success.
Thank you so much.
And Kate is also, we're super excited. She was our number one choice to have as our first guest on the pod because in addition to being a highly successful coach, she's also been using MSPE with her teams. And we've had the privilege of getting to collaborate with her for the last couple of years. So she has some great firsthand knowledge and experience about mindfulness and MSPE and incorporating it into sports. So we will pick your brain in a little bit about what it's been like for you.
Great.
But first, we are going to start with a brief meditation. And actually, I had asked Kate which meditation she would prefer we do based on some of the work that we've done with the team. She actually picked out a meditation that is not one of our kind of standard MSPE meditations, but something that we did a few years into the work. It's a compassion-focused meditation. It's called Tonglen. It's part of the Tibetan Buddhist meditative practice. It means giving and taking. But basically, it is an imagery-based meditation where you are imagining yourself kind of taking on the suffering of another person and trying to give them back compassion and comfort. And we had done this with the team a few times, and they responded to it really well. And we'll talk about it later on in the episode, but let's get into the meditation. Oh, like we said in our last episode, though, if you are, say, driving in your car, maybe don't close your eyes. Hopefully you are in a space that is quiet and calm to participate in this meditation. But wherever you are, you can let your eyes close and just start by touching into the points of contact, maybe your feet on the ground or the backs of your legs or your back on your chair or couch. As you let yourself settle in, bring your attention now to your breath. There's no need to breathe more deeply or more slowly. There's no right way. Just observing however you're breathing, finding a gentle rhythm. Once you feel your body and mind settle into that rhythm, bring to mind the image of a person you care about. Imagine as if they are sitting right across from you. Picture their face, the color of their hair. Imagine what clothes they might be wearing. Give some detail to this image. And as you imagine them sitting across from you, begin to think about the ways that they may be carrying pain. If you know them well, perhaps you know details of their life. You know ways that maybe they've been hurt or betrayed, maybe grief they've experienced. But even if you don't know any of those details, you know that they're a human. You know that just like you, people have probably misled them, lied to them, hurt them in some way. You know that pain and you know that they carry that pain. And you also know how much you care about them. Tap into that compassion, a desire, if you could, to take some of that pain away. And so as you imagine them sitting across from you, begin to see a thick cloud of dark gray smoke begin to emanate from their forehead. that smoke is all of the pain and the suffering. And as you breathe in, imagine as if you are taking that smoke, taking it into yourself. And as you exhale, imagine from your chest, from your heart, there is a bright white light emanating directly into the chest of this person across from you. As you breathe in and take in their struggle, you breathe out and give them back comfort, soothing, compassion. Continuing to sit in the gentle rhythm of your breath. Continuing to view this person in your mind's eye. Feeling you both existing together, connected by compassion and caring. Appreciating your own willingness to take on another person's pain. That's how much you care about this other person. Perhaps even imagining that wherever they are out in the real world, they feel just a bit lighter, just a bit calmer, because you're sitting here now, breathing out and giving them your care and your compassion. And as we bring this meditation to a close, you can let the image of this person begin to fade away. Bring your attention back into your body, to the points of contact, your feet on the ground, your legs and back, on whatever surface you're sitting on. Maybe wiggle your fingers and your toes. And whenever you feel ready, you can open your eyes and bring your attention back to the world around you. All right. So now that we have centered ourselves and are getting ready to kind of enter into this talk with Kate, I'm kind of curious to start with just, you know, why you picked that meditation.
So I picked that meditation because it's a fan favorite amongst all the teams that I've coached at Marymount who have done it. But I think the reason that I picked it out of all the ones that we've done that have also been beneficial in different ways is just because the reaction of my team. I think that some people react differently to different meditations and some work for them and some don't. But I think that is one where I've seen kind of like 100% success rate, that they all, you know, got something from that. It resonates with them. They all talk about it, even in our sessions that we still do with Dr. P. And I think that there's no greater work than being a teammate. And I think that it's hard work and it's super rewarding, but it is work. And I think that that meditation kind of puts some of that not so glamorous work into a different light. And my players are able to connect with each other on a different level. They connect on and off the field in a variety of different ways. But I think sometimes, you know, recognizing that the other person is a human and yeah, they're your friend or your roommate or your teammate and all these different relationships that you have with them. But I also think bringing it back to kind of like a different level of like they're a human. They've also experienced things good and bad before their time at Marymount. They've experienced things with you, good and bad, at their time at Marymount. And I don't know, I just think it is a whole new level of like connection. And I think that that might not necessarily be the sole purpose of that meditation, but I think that at the end, people definitely feel lighter themselves. They feel more compassionate towards their teammates. They feel connected towards their teammates. And we talk a lot about like self-talk and compassion and how you want to talk to each other on and off the field. And so I think for them to actually have to sit and practice compassion, it's one thing to say, have compassion for each other and you should have compassion because she's your teammate and you should have compassion compassion because you have problems too. But I think that's a way to actually practice compassion instead of just telling kids that they need to have it. And just like anything, practice makes perfect. So I think that after that meditation, I saw such a difference in how they treated each other on and off the field and self-talk, which was positive.
I love the way you said that, that this is a skill that you practice. Right. And that's what really, at least for me, lit me up about mindfulness and related practices is it felt like these are trainable, practicable skills that have obviously broader life applications. It's not something you do once and all of a sudden you're a master at it. But it is something you can see pretty impressive improvements in if you dedicate yourself to this kind of routine. And I'm really curious to hear. So when we published our book and revealed our model for MSPE, we wanted to highlight the importance of self-compassion, but also we're pretty upfront in saying, you know, we don't talk about self-compassion overtly with athletes and coaches all that much, because it's hard for them to hear. It's not an idea that's readily embraced in sport at this point. And yet sports science and certainly our experience tells us that it's vital. It's a really important thing. So I know that's a long question, but my the substance of it is how did you embrace this? How did you yourself think, yeah, self-compassion sounds like a great thing to try, and how did you convince your team to try it?
So I think, you know, convincing them wasn't hard because they slowly but surely saw the results of our training sessions with, I always say Dr. P. I know his name is Tim, but my team has forever ingrained Dr. P in my head. So Dr. P, I think that it's easy with especially college athletes because, you know, you're telling them every single thing they have to do, when they're going to class, when we're going to practice, what play we're doing, who we're playing. You make up their entire schedule for 4 years. So in a way, I have kind of the edge on that we are going to this training, we're going to do it. There's really, you know, they can be there and not participate, but what's the point of that? And so I think that at first there was a lot of, I don't want to say resistance, but kind of lack of experience. A lot of them didn't have experience with mindfulness or training or talking about compassion or practicing it, or, you know, skills that weren't necessarily physical. So I think that it took a little bit for buy-in, and not that they were resistant, but just to understand kind of what it was. But I think all it takes, especially with kids of, you know, this age group, they want feedback, they want instant gratification. And obviously there a lot goes into you know, practicing mindfulness, but I think that right away they saw small differences that, you know, not stressing about an exam or, you know, how to talk to each other, things like that. And so ultimately they want to be the best athlete they can be, and if they saw those changes were positively impact them off the field, and that's kind of how we started, was like, you know, off the field and how it trickles into on the field things. And as soon as they saw that, then they were super excited to use it on the field and incorporate it more and more into what we do. And Dr. P always talks to us about how, you know, we go to the weight room, we practice sprinting, we practice stick work, we do all of this, but no one practices actually, you know, the mental training part. And I think that's a really good way of explaining it. Like, you go lift to get stronger, why wouldn't you do this meditation to be a better player overall? And so I think the college athlete experience is unique in the fact that we have resources like this. We have people who support, you know, this kind of research and this kind of training. And so I feel like we were kind of in the right place at the right time, and it all kind of came together. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
That was a lot of information.
I think you actually answered more than my question, Okay. Right? And talking about mindfulness more broadly and how you made the sale and the appeal to you of that particular approach. And I mean, I was just asking you about self-compassion, but I think what you answered really speaks to the broader issue, right?
Well, and this is why I was so excited to talk to you. You know, because, well, for context, so Kate and I have been working together now, this is our fifth year, me working with her team. And I had actually previously worked at Marymount University. I worked in their counseling center. And so I was there, I was on campus, but I was also doing this mindfulness-based sports psych stuff. So when I had first started working there, I reached out to the athletic department, let them know that I was there, and Kate was really interested. And so we kind of started our relationship really quickly. But so the thing I was really excited to talk about was, what happens when you do this work long-term? And I think you were speaking to that, you know, there is a, if you don't want to call it resistance, right, kind of a lack of familiarity, a lack of experience with doing this kind of mental training. But it is, when they observe the impact, when they give themselves the chance to like actually have a mindful experience and what that does, it really does start to open them up. Because we didn't even get into these like compassion-focused meditations until it was like the second or third year we were working together. And, it was interesting for me to hear you say like it didn't take much selling at all, because by the time we got there they had the experience. Because I know both Keith and I have worked with teams, we tried to introduce compassion earlier and it does not go well because they haven't had those experiences yet. But so I really wanted us to be able to talk about like what happens over the long term, and to be aware of like what's challenging on the front end. So I guess that's a question I have for you, like, before we started working together or right in the very beginning, what was difficult about the mindfulness stuff? Did it kind of rub up against kind of a way that you had been coaching or a way that you had been taught?
So I think what was difficult is, as a former student athlete, I take a lot of what was good about my experience and what still connects me to my university and my teammates and my coaches, and I try to implement that with my team. I have a lot of really talented assistants who also have very different playing experiences than myself, and so we all try to pull what was really good and meaningful from our experiences and to kind of cultivate like what we think is like the ultimate student athlete experience. And I think what was hard in the beginning is none of us had a background in mindfulness. None of us had that experience as a student athlete. The only thing I can really recall that was similar is we did yoga. And I think that was kind of presented to us as like, it helps you with recovery and not be as sore and kind of stretching out, and not so much as like a mindfulness practice. So that was the only thing that I ever could connect from my own experience as a player. But I knew this was up and coming, and I knew that other teams were doing it, and I knew that there's a lot of education and research about it. And I was just, I don't want to say resistant, but I was unfamiliar with it in general. My friend Christina, who is one of my very close friends, she actually played at Catholic in DC, but she was really into visualization and some, I would say, kind of like the beginning of the mindfulness train. And she would have them lay on the field and do these meditations and stuff. And I just thought that she was super woo-woo, but she's my friend. I let her do it and calm the kids down. Then I realized she was totally onto something, and then she left. And so that was right. She took another opportunity. She was actually studying counseling at Marymount. And then she took another opportunity as coaching. And so I knew that that was important. And I think as a coach, sometimes you know things are important and you should do them, even though if you don't know about them. So that was kind of the case with mindfulness. I didn't know about it, but I knew it was important. I knew I wanted to be successful. I was a new head coach. I wanted to do any and everything to be a comprehensive coach and coach from all angles. And so when Christina left and she kind of took care of that stuff for our program, that was the same time that I got the email from Dr. P. I was like, yes, I'm interested. I need someone else to help me with this. And I think what's different about the work that Christina did versus what we do as a team now is I wasn't really involved. It was her thing, and I knew that she knew a lot about it. So, I was doing other things. And so when we first started, I didn't really know Dr. P. So I thought it important to be a part of these sessions and to hear what he was saying to my team and how it would impact me as a coach and how I could take what he's saying and, put a lacrosse spin on it and how I could implement it. Since we were spending this time with him, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just that hour that we were, talking about it. So I think then when I actually did the training, and I also did a coach's training that he did for some of our department, once I did those trainings, then I felt like I kind of understood what it meant, and then I was able to go from there.
Yeah, so when you said before that it was a matter of timing, right place, right time, okay, so that's true to an extent, but it also took you being progressive and open-minded and willing to take a chance, like the way you just said, basically coach from every angle, coach the whole athlete, not just the physical performance, but the mental.
Yes. And it, you know, like I said, right place, right time, totally worked out for me that Dr. P was working there. But I was, prior to that, open-minded. And I did understand that it was a need. And I also think too, that kids experience a lot of different things, different styles of coaching, different levels of play. They're from different backgrounds before they get to the college level. And so that's what makes our team unique and really diverse. But also that, which is a great benefit, but the flip side of that is everyone's very different and we have to all play the same. We have to all get on the same page with this new, you know, for freshmen who are coming in, they've had all these different coaches, all these different experiences. And now I want them to be playing our way and our style and adhere to our culture and all that kind of stuff. So I felt like this was a really good way, especially with the class I had coming in. They were a big class, very talented. They were kind of the class I recruited to take us to the next level, which they did. And I feel like this was a common ground. It was like, okay, they're all different in all these different ways, but this is something that we can do together and all kind of get on the same page in terms of mental, because I knew that we had a lot of work to do to get on the same page physically. We had a lot of different styles of play. And so I knew that was going to be work. And I thought that starting kind of with the mental side of things and kind of getting us all on the same page would really help to getting us on the same page on the field. And it totally did.
Yeah. I mean, I think something we've talked and written a lot about is what we call the mental training paradox, which is the tendency to pay lip service to mental training, to know it's important, but to not actually do it. And so to hear a coach today talk about, hey, this is doable. I did it. I thought it was important. I put value. I put time into learning about this and trying it. And it's paid off. It's paid dividends. And that's something we believe so strongly. And obviously, we do work with mindfulness and MSPE. But there's a larger issue that we're trying to tackle in just getting people to commit to mental training as a valuable way to spend your time as a team. So we certainly commend you as a coach in being willing to do that. And we know from the work and knowing you for this time, but also just hearing you today, that it's so cool to hear how it's paid off. And I wonder, you know, we know that it's not a smooth road. We know that this isn't an easy thing to do by any means. So I wonder if you could speak to what some of the challenges have been to implementing mental training, to implementing MSPE specifically, with your team and trying to change the culture in the way you're describing.
So I think there's some obvious and not obvious challenges. I think the obvious one is sometimes just scheduling, and it's a group of 18 to 22 year olds and their schedule is already jam-packed and they're already stressed about classes. So adding one more thing at first, you know, can seem daunting to them, and especially one more thing that they maybe aren't used to doing in their usual training. So I think if I added one more lift, be like, okay, I get that. The more I lift, the stronger I am. You know, the harder I can work, the, you know, less injuries I have, that they understand. So I think adding one more thing that they didn't understand was a challenge in the beginning. But again, like after they had a couple of sessions, I think that challenge kind of went away. But like Dr. P said before, he was working at Marymount in the counseling center, so kind of in a different capacity. So just scheduling sometimes was going back and forth. But once we got that down, you know, we have to do everything in the morning. And I would say a challenge sometimes is that there's always one person who has to stand up because they get a little tired during the meditation. But once they realize that it's worth their time to stay awake for, then we have no problems with that going forward. I would say the other challenge is just kind of the person or leaders who are going to step up to take the first kind of plunge in those meetings. And it always takes the first couple meetings we have in the fall. Freshmen and sophomores sometimes are a little more quiet, a little more reserved. And it takes kind of those upperclassmen or those leaders or those really strong players that they are looking up to kind of say, like, hey, you need to talk during this session. You need to listen because this is how it's helped me. This is how, you know, I broke that record last year is because I was able to implement this. This is how, you know, we're going to have a winning season is if you get on board with this. So I think one of the challenges is definitely getting kids who are new to the program and new to mental training to buy in right away. And what that takes is the older girls and the leaders really kind of at first showing that they are invested in it. And I would say that's one of the big challenges. And then another challenge from the coaching aspect is just practice planning and how to fit it in and where to fit it in. We practice 2 hours a day during season. And that sounds like a lot since we're practicing every single day, primarily in preseason with a day off, but 2 hours goes by really fast. And when, you know, you're trying to get all the conditioning in, you're trying to get all the plays in, the offense, defense, all that kind of stuff going, it can be really hard to fit that in. And so that was definitely a challenge for me and my coaching staff at first. And I saw that the more I took the time, took 5 minutes away from something that wasn't necessarily going to make or break our season. You know, if we were doing 10 minutes of ground balls and then we did 5 instead, like I didn't see a significant drop in that stat. So, but what I did see is a significant rise in other, I guess, non-statistical categories like compassion, positive attitude, resilience, the ability to kind of shake it off, those kind of things. So then I realized that that 5 minutes of a drill that we do over and over could definitely better serve us in other ways. And so I would just start with like cutting 5 minutes off of something or 2 minutes off of, you know, a different drill and implementing some of the meditations that we did or a lot of the kind of compassion things we did. We have wingmen, which is like your accountability partner, getting with them in the beginning of practice, talking about what your set an intention. Once I realized that it was a lot easier than I thought to put those things into the practice plan, that was a challenge that we overcame. And then I think just being consistent in that and that it really is one of those things that, you know, you have to be consistent. You can't do it just on Monday and expect that you're going to do well with it on Saturday in the game. And so I think once I learned how to properly insert it into what is already kind of our practice flow and practice plan, it was a lot easier. And I no longer see that as a challenge.
What a beautiful description of how to overcome what we see is probably the biggest roadblock. And we've talked to a lot of coaches about this and just athletes as well. And it's not just in sports psychology. You see this for any kind of change in life. The number one excuse people give is lack of time. Mm-hmm. I just don't have time for one more thing, just like you said. Right. But here, what you explained so beautifully is how you can overcome that barrier, right? How you can make time. And it doesn't have to be something dramatic. It can be something that you said takes 2 minutes or 5 minutes. And what you start to see is by reprioritizing that way, perhaps there's a greater gain. Right. I love the way you were saying, like, maybe if we cut back on ground balls for a few minutes, that's not going to statistically significantly impact our season. But spending that 5 minutes doing the mental training has a significant impact because it's new. It's different.
Right. And I think that once I realized and once the kids realized that we weren't adding time to practice or adding another session or adding something, we were actually just taking 5 minutes that we already had scheduled and replacing it with something different, I think also really helps them as athletes to not make it feel like it's an extra thing or that they're being asked to dedicate more time to something. It was just a simple switch. And I think that really, again, helped with kind of their overall buy-in and the way that they see it, that it's already built into their practice and not something that they see as extra.
Well, I think you're speaking to something that's really important. I mean, I see kind of the key to overcoming all of the obstacles that you mentioned is your commitment, right? It's your willingness to take it seriously. Because I mean, you talked about, you know, having the team leaders speak up, but I certainly remember kind of early on in some of our meetings, it was you who, you know, whether it was sharing about your own experience as an athlete or if we were talking about a particular concept, like actually kind of encouraging other people to speak up. Like, and you were there, you were in the sessions, you were doing the meditations, and I mean, they saw that. And so I think, you know, you helped really get that ball rolling with them speaking up. And then to be willing to, I mean, I think most coaches would say sacrifice, but I don't think sacrifice is the right word, but sacrifice, you know, physical playing time for this mental training stuff. I think most coaches do want to add it on. Because they think, well, physical training is obviously clearly the most important,
right?
And if we can add on a little bit here and there, maybe we'll do some of the mental training stuff. And we've certainly worked with teams where that's been the case. And it has been kind of like a poison pill, because exactly like you're describing, the athletes are like, I don't want to do an extra thing. And and they hear the message that, okay, physical is more important. So that's why we're prioritizing physical. We're adding this on, but I don't have to pay too close attention to it. So you being willing to say like, no, this is an extra. This is just part of what we do, right? We're taking this 5 minutes. We're not going to, you know, just push through this drill. We're actually going to do this meditation now. I think it sends such a powerful message to the team. This is the culture shift we talk about mindfulness being a way that the team operates, not just a set of tools we pull out when we're in trouble.
Right. And I think that that is definitely a mindset that my current team has. And I think it's taken working with you for 5 years to get to where we are now. And it's really helpful to see my older players who have come through that process, and to see how it can impact them, and to see that it is part of our culture and it is part of how we talk. It's part of how we plan. It's part of how we play, which I think at first it was something we were adding, something we were trying, and something we were just doing like we do everything else. And so it's really nice to see that those older players who have this experience are then sharing that with the newer players. And I think that is how culture comes to be, is that these older players are teaching them the ways of, you know, how we operate and what is important to our program. And it's kind of nice, because then we don't have to start all over at the beginning like we did so many years ago. Now it's kind of those older girls who are taking on that role, and no longer kind of me having to say, this is what we're going to do and this is how it's going to help us. And so it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah.
So we were talking to a colleague of ours who's in elite sport. She's a psychologist, sports psychologist, who works with a professional team. And what you're speaking to, I think, is such an important point in terms of the long-term investment in something like this. Because she was making the point, she's also doing something similar where she's been working to make mindfulness a part of the culture where she works. And it's amazing the things that she's already seen. But she was speaking about how hard it is to make that sale to the coaches. She's part of an academy system, so there's a lot of coaches, a lot of teams she engages, and how we work in a sports world of instant gratification. People want results. They want them now. They want to know how this is going to benefit me now. And what you're describing today is really the long-term benefit of doing something like this, of having athletes come through your program and having been exposed to this, working with Tim and kind of getting this and seeing how that really changes things. I wonder what you would say to your coaching colleagues, the folks who might say, you know, this sounds really cool, but I don't have 5 years. Right? I don't have 5 years to do this. Like, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that it takes 5 years, and it's 5 years that are worth it at the college level. I think obviously it could be done in a much more condensed time. And I think if buy-in is 100% in the beginning, then it wouldn't take 5 years. But I also think it's hard too, because at the college level, you're constantly having new players. Every single season, you have anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 new freshmen. And so you can't leave them out to dry and not take the time to teach them about mindfulness and teach them the basics. And so what I would say to my colleagues is that once your team is established, like the older players, the returners who have had this experience, I do think it does take less time. Like with freshmen, instead of a whole team, like getting everyone on board and getting everyone to buy in and getting everyone to do the practice and getting everyone to figure out where their role is with mindfulness and how it's going to impact them on and off the field, now it's kind of just the freshmen, which is nice. It's a much smaller group. It's much easier to tackle one group instead of the whole team. And it's a lot easier to say, this is what our team does, instead of to the whole team, this is what we're all trying, this is what we're all, you know, working towards. It's a smaller group to say, this is, you know, who we are and what we do, and this is how you're going to do it. So I think what I would say to my colleagues is, I'm sure it could be done a lot faster than 5 years. That's how long it took us. But that is totally worth it. And I think slow and steady wins the race. And I think however you choose to implement it will impact how long it takes. And I think doing it in kind of like I talked before, like small changes over time. I mean, I just don't think that it's something you can do overnight, because kids have to play a season and see the benefit of it. And I always think of Elle. I feel like she's the biggest shining example of what mindfulness can do on and off the field for many reasons. And I think that it's taken her 4 years, and she's a senior, and she is practicing mindfulness on and off the field consistently and doing really well in both aspects. And so that is what I would say to coaches, is that you basically have to give it enough time to let that freshman who's resistant to it become the L who is the glue of your team and the hardest worker. And I think that, I don't know that there's a fast track for it. And I'm sure with all the tools that you guys have, there is probably a fast track. And if people really buy in.
There's not. That's the thing, that we have to be the bearers of this news.
Yeah.
That you can't fast track this.
Yeah, I just think, and I think it's the same for culture, or like a culture shift, or like a leadership change. Like, you can't just say, you know, overnight, like, okay, we really prioritize these things. I know yesterday we didn't, but today we do. So I want you to practice being an upstanding citizen. I want you to be really compassionate, and I want you to really love community service. You know, that's something that overnight these kids don't do. So it's slow and steady, and you implement it over time, and it just transforms into your culture. It transforms into who your alumni are. It transforms, you know, their experience as a student athlete. And that, in, you know, just full circle comes to help us recruit, because we talk about the experience that these kids have had. We talk about where they are now, and we can explain that this is part of it.
Wow, it's so cool to hear you talk about this, really.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm like wanting to jump in, because it's not as if there was like no impact for 5 years.
Yeah, so
and
true.
Then suddenly,
so true.
Like, oh, now we get
right.
It. But I mean, that is when we're talking about culture shift. Yeah. I mean, think about, well, I mean, what's the textbook definition of culture, right? It is a collection of beliefs, practices, and rituals that are passed down generation to generation, right? So it requires time. Embedded in the definition is exactly what you're talking about. Like, one class learns it, and they tell the next class, and the next class, and the next class. That requires time. But over these 5 years, I certainly know that we've kind of experienced other impacts, other benefits. So
yes.
It's so like, I don't think there's any fast track to the culture change, but I do think there is an impact that begins to build fairly quickly.
Yes, I would say that there was immediate impact, like after day one. But I think what you're saying is right about the culture shift that has taken this long. And I think that's simply because of the style of college athletics too. You know, we have kids coming in and out. So the kids that we started with when we began this journey were freshmen. And then by the time that they were seniors, that's really when we had a complete culture shift in a lot of different ways, not just with mindfulness. So I think that's why at the college level, it takes that long. But I think as soon as we started in the first year, we had an impact on and off the field. We had an impact, I think, with my philosophy of coaching and my staff's philosophy. I think kids viewed game day differently. I think we had a better idea about how to regulate nerves and not fixate on outcomes and all that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, that's the year where we really started to see success on the field too. So I don't think that it's taken us 5 years to see the on the field results, because we saw those right away in that first season, and then continued to see them. And I feel like right when we, in 2017, I think we broke a lot of records for winning season, most wins. We won the ECAC championship, went to playoffs in the CAC. All that kind of stuff was right in the thick of where we really got into like mindfulness, and we had done kind of the building blocks and the basics. And that was when we were doing the compassion meditations. We were doing the running meditations that Dr. P taught us, the stick work. We were really, really taking what we learned and implementing it into actual lacrosse. And that is when I feel like we really saw the peak benefits, and now it's just continued to go up from there. But I do think that there are really short-term impacts, and then obviously the culture shift has been the long-term impact for us.
And that's so gratifying for us to hear, because really I think on all levels what you're saying, but as designers of MSPE and what we hoped for the program was exactly what you just said. the idea that it would be mindfulness that ultimately is integrated into performance itself. And it sounds like on your team, as you're saying, you've seen shorter term benefits, you've seen performer benefits, but you've seen benefits beyond the field as well, and the way it's transformed the culture of your team. And you're saying how these young women have perhaps become, I don't want to say better people, but learned a lot. Definitely. Through the experience. Mm-hmm. It's we sort of joke when we do these MSPE trainings, you know, we call it a performance enhancement program, but we're sort of sneaking in the life skills, right? And we talk about this a lot too, that a lot of people see benefits first off the field, right? And as a student athlete, perhaps in how they take a test or how they navigate a conflict with a friend, and eventually on the field as well. So it is just so cool to hear what your experience has been, and we thank you so much for your time. I wish we had more time, but we do need to bring this to a close. Was there anything else that you wanted to say in closing, Kate?
No, I just wanted to say thank you for having me. This has been a really cool experience. I know my team will love listening to this. They think they're famous because they work with Dr. P. And I think that for anyone listening, if you're a coach and you really want to help your team, not only on the field, but off the field, and just to become more mindful people, that this is definitely a path for that. And I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you so much, Kate.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here.
And thank you all for listening. And I just want to take a moment and thank our producer as well, Taylor Brown from UT Austin. Thank you for all of your help and for your editing and all of your mastery behind the scenes. And our colleague, Dr. Carol Glass, as well, for all that you do for us. Thank you. If you want to be in touch with us, engage us, you can please visit our Facebook page, our MSPE Facebook page. You can also follow me, Dr. Keith Kaufman, on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @mindfulsportdoc. And you're also welcome to visit our website, mindfulsportperformance.org. So thank you very much.
See you next time.
Thank you.